Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Shogger, how are you?
Hey, buddy, doing well today. The balls, the dominoes are starting to fall. Hey, a little bit here and there.
Lots happening. Bob McKenzie just confirming it's $5 million flat for Freddie Anderson for the next 5 years. So $5 million a year for the next 5 years for their starting goaltender. A little bit heavier of a price tag on the cap hit than what the Oilers are paying Cam Talbot. They gave up more for him. But you look at their career numbers, Talbot actually has a little bit better career numbers at 924 save percentage in 106 starts. To Anderson's 918 and 114 starts. So what do you think of this trade from Toronto's perspective or Anaheim's?
Good. And actually, I'll just throw it out there. I'm just 585 is the number on Osterley. I don't know if that's out there or not. 585 is the number. Still trying to confirm that. But if it is one way, the NHL money is 585.
Okay.
So I'll keep working on that. Anyways, it's the year where there's a lot of good goaltenders that are available, and I think that we're going to see more of that moving forward because expansion is happening, and teams know they're only going to be able to protect one guy, so they need to get their goaltending situation figured out. So the Leafs, they have a need, and they got to go out and be aggressive in trying to fill it. I don't know what do you think of Anderson? I've seen him play in the playoffs. He's a big body, not in the greatest shape. Like, he doesn't look like a spectacular athlete, but he was okay for them in the playoffs the 1 year. But I can't help but think there might be some better options moving forward here. Two-way deal for Osterley, by the way.
Okay. See, I don't see many better options than Freddie Anderson. When you look at his age, you look at his numbers. We had Kevin Woodley on. Anderson shed 20 pounds over the last few years to play better in the National Hockey. I actually think Anderson's better than Gibson.
Yeah.
Right? That's where I think Anaheim, it's a tough decision. I'm not going to say it's Justin Poggi, Tuukka Rask-like difference, but I think now the difference is Anderson's numbers might not be great for the next few years because you look at the team he's playing behind compared to what Anaheim's going to have with Gibson. But honestly, I looked at Anaheim's team when Anderson played there this year. I thought they were better. They could have won that series if Anderson started the first two games and not Gibson, in my book.
Yeah, no, and that's fair. I mean, Gibson, there's a time where Gibson is pretty highly sought after, and where, I wouldn't pick anybody ahead of him in the organization to have been the guy to give the ball to and to move forward with. He's younger than Anderson, too, is he not?
Yeah, he's 2 years younger.
2 years younger than Anderson, yeah. Teams are going to have to make these tough decisions on their their goaltending situation. And there are a number of teams. Look at the Tampa Bay Lightning. And they've got Vasilevsky, who a lot of teams probably pinpoint as a guy that's ready to be a starter. And then they've got Bishop coming up, who's unrestricted after the year. He's a heavy number this year. Do you go ahead and pull the trigger on that? They could really use the cap space of having Bishop off the books, but now you're banking on Vasilevsky being your guy moving forward. So the goaltending decisions that need to be made, I mean, similar scenario in Pittsburgh where they won a Stanley Cup with a kid, but are you willing to move your franchise goaltender for the sake of a guy who had a really good two-month stretch? Goaltending is voodoo at the best of times, so trying to make huge organizational decisions based on franchise players is tough.
Shogger, the another defenseman who looks like he might be off the books is Keith Yandle. As the Panthers acquired his rights and now are looking to negotiate on a 6-year extension for him to stay in Florida.
Cool.
And you're hearing that he's 28 or 9, I think, is Yandle. And then you've got all the rumblings that they're going to switch potentially Kulikov to Boston. Right? Well, what do you make of Florida and all the moves they're doing on their back end?
Yeah, that's a lot going on back there, hey? They're definitely flip-flopping some guys around. I mean, so this is what I know. I really liked Mike Matheson's game. Really did like his game. I watched him at the World Championships, and he moves really well. And I think they view him as a guy who is getting better and better. And so with that in mind, they decided they were able to move Eric Gudbranson. You had Alex Petrovic on your show not too long ago. Really good player, really good young player who's getting better and taking on more responsibility. Aaron Ekblad one of the best young defensemen in the world, only getting better year after year. So between, my goodness, between Petrovic, Matheson, Ekblad, Kulikov is maybe a luxury they don't need to afford because they've got lots of good young defensemen.
Edmonton Oilers, Jordan Oesterle, you tweeted out $585 on a two-way contract.
Yeah.
He's really, I guess, kind of, if everything doesn't pan out, that's a guy who's going to get a long look on the right side, on their blue line, potentially. But after watching what Davidson did last year and then kind of coming out of nowhere, really, to have as good of a season he did, what's your expectations for Oesterle long-term? Do you think he was as good as some of the numbers suggest, or is this a guy that most likely is not going to be a difference maker moving forward?
Well, I don't know if he'll be a difference maker, but he can definitely be a depth guy in the organization that can come in and play a bottom pairing role, I think, and be a second power play unit guy if they don't put better players in front of him. So I would rather see them invest some more time in Oesterle than in Clendenning, right? Because Oesterle can skate. And if you can skate as a defenseman on this team, you can skate yourself out of trouble and buy yourself enough time to find these forwards. Like, Clendenning couldn't skate, and that it was an issue for him. I found it really stuck out in his game, and he didn't really bring anything else. He was basically supposed to be a puck-moving, offensive-minded defenseman, but he didn't skate well enough. So I'm okay with them choosing to put resources at Oesterle ahead of Clendenning. The right side is an issue here. And there are not a lot of great options depth-wise on the right side. I could see Eric Greiba potentially landing back on that third pairing on the right side. And then Oesterle, from an organizational standpoint, is kind of that 7-8 guy.
Ryan Schaug from TSN joins us. Schauger, you saw the Eskimos. You and I were sitting side-by-side on Saturday. A pretty dominating performance. You look, when you're putting up over 500 yards in a preseason game offensively, that's pretty good. You know, to me, I don't see any weaknesses in their offense. And their offensive line and the no huddle offense, I'm in love with it. Like, I absolutely love it. I was watching Sean Lemon on two different occasions where he basically had no gas after, you know, they were three or four series and they're running down the field. He had nothing left. He couldn't get after the quarterback. And I think that's going to be a huge advantage for them because defenses, if they don't practice it, they're not going to get accustomed to going that many snaps in a row because most D linemen, they switch out every two or three snaps.
Yeah, well, the trick to that is, and I mean, look, it worked early for the Eskimos, right? The trick to that is staying with it if it doesn't work in the early going. It's a difficult thing to stick with if you're down in a game and things aren't going well. You turn the ball over in your first series or two as a result of not taking time to set up and a miscommunication here or there. All's great when you're clicking and it's executing. But it's kind of one of those things where if things start going poorly for a half a game, how quickly do you get away from it and say, okay, we need to take the time we have to make sure everything's looked after and taken care of. And that'll be, we'll see how committed Jason Moss is to this system, because the true test of it is how committed he is to it when the going gets tough. Or if it's one of those, it's like years ago when Ralph Kruger was coaching the Oilers, and he decided he didn't want to do game day skates anymore. So every game day skate was optional. That's just the way he was going to do it, right? Then they lost a bunch of games, and you look foolish because you look like you're not trying everything you possibly can to make sure you're crossing every T and dotting every I. So now all of a sudden they were game day skates every day. Similar in that if you're not taking the time to relay the plays, to get the offense out, let everybody be calm, know what's being called, get up to the line, and you're struggling, now you start to look like, well, slow it down. Take your time and at least make sure you're getting it right. So how they do when they struggle will show how committed Jason Moss is to it.
One last one for you, Schauger.
Yeah.
Expansion rules. You know, I talked to a lot of people here the last few days, and one of the big ones is, you know, as far as if you trade a player at the draft deadline, you might not be able to trade him again before the expansion draft. All sorts of different rules that could unfold here in the next 48 hours.
Yeah, and lots of that needs to get sorted out. I mean, another one, too, for these guys is that cap needs to get nailed down, too. And, you know, you need to get hard numbers in play. Like the guys who are in charge of, you know, caps and the money side of things. I mean, they live and die by this stuff, so they need rules to be in place. But yeah, so what you got to do is they're going to try and set up a scenario where you're unable to, let's say another team has an extra spot to protect a guy. Now you trade that player to them along with a fourth round draft pick, and all of a sudden they protect that player, and now he gets moved back. Like they need to put rules in place to prevent any kind of circumvention of making the proper types of players available. And you know, general managers, as creative as they are, the second they're done fighting with the players over a new CBA, they get to work trying to figure out how to circumvent the very CBA they just fought for. So that's the way it works. So the league's going to have to be diligent in figuring out ways to make sure that teams can't come up with loopholes and get around some of this stuff.
Jogger, it should be an interesting week. We will see you in Buffalo. Talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good, pal. Take care.